Name something that gets passed around.
A joint.
A joint.
Now, streaming live on the Marijuana Agenda.
Oh, gnarly.
What are you people? On dope?
It's time for Toker Talk Radio.
Hey, this is great, man.
The voice of the marijuana nation.
Marijuana is listed as a Schedule I drug. That is absurd.
Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ. That's 650-534-2565.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Hey, man. Am I driving okay?
Toker Talk Radio is your chance to make your voice heard in the marijuana nation.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
Send that message with clarity that good people don't smoke marijuana.
Now let's get to joking and talking with your host, Russ Belville.
He's right, you know. Good people do not smoke marijuana. Outstanding people smoke marijuana. People with highly developed intellect who have evaluated the risks and rewards and chosen to make the safest possible choice in altering their consciousness, mellowing their mood, treating their illnesses, dealing with their symptoms. That's right. We are an outstanding people. We are true Americans. You know, this weekend is the 4th of July weekend, the Independence Day weekend, although really on Tuesday. So some people are lucking out and getting a 5-day weekend. I'm actually going to do a show on Monday. We've got the premiere of our new segment featuring Americans for Safe Access. We got Dr. Jehan Marku joining us to talk about Americans for Safe Access's patient-focused certification. So we'll have a Monday show for those of you on the Independence Day break. You can check us out live. That'll be great. We've also got lots of folks signing up at our Patreon page. Or is it Patreon? Patreon. Anyway, our Patreon page, which is at mjagenda.com, that's where you can get the VIP subscription to this podcast, the Toker Talk Radio second hour, or you can just go with a one-hour podcast, just the first hour. But with the second-hour podcast, you get ad-free downloads of the segment from the first hour that you can then share, post, whatever you want to do with them. So it's all at mjagenda.com, $4.20 a month for the basic subscription, $9.99 a month for the VIP. And it works out, if you get the basic subscription, you're getting that first hour for 21 cents an episode. Yeah, 420, you get 21 episodes, you get 20 episodes at least per month. So yeah, about 21 cents or less per episode. And then for the extra, oh, what is it? $5.80 more. That works out to, what, another 23, 24 cents an episode, something like that. Plus all those downloads, you know, whatever the cost of that is. So please, if you can make that happen, please do. We're on our goal to making $4.20 a month. And once we pass that goal, we're going for $7.10 a month. And let's see if we can get to $4.20 before $7.10, before July 10th. That'd be really cool. We're doing great here as well with the new free Cannabis Headline News podcast. You can get that at news.mjagenda.com. It's a separate subscription than your Patreon subscription. If you're getting the basic or the VIP, it doesn't include Cannabis Headline News. That's its own subscription now. And I'm designing Cannabis Headline News now as its own separate standalone kind of podcast, and hoping to distribute it to other locations like 420 Radio, like some of these other outlets that could use just a little five-minute news recap. So get your free news at news.mjagenda.com. But America's turning 241 years old this July 4th, 241 years. And this October, I think it's 3rd, maybe it's the 1st, it's in October, very first week of October, is the 80th anniversary of the implementation of the Marijuana Tax Act, the first federal prohibition of marijuana. But now keep in mind, in 1937, by the time they passed that federal act, marijuana was already prohibited in all 48 states. And there were only 48 states at that time, no Alaska, no Hawaii. So it was already completely illegal nationwide, but We like to count 1937 as that's the year the Marijuana Tax Act made it federally illegal. There's other acts. You can look at the Boggs Act that instituted mandatory minimums, and you get into the 1970s, the Controlled Substance Act, and 1986 and 88 with the tougher drug laws, the 94 crime bill with three strikes and you're out. There's all sorts of milestones, but that 1937, that's right there where we say is the modern prohibition era. So we're talking 80 years of marijuana prohibition in a country that's 241 years old. That means marijuana has been legal in this country twice as long as it's been illegal. You work it out, right? 161 years, there were no federal laws against marijuana. In fact, you know, in the early colonial founding, there were laws mandating. There was absolute mandate on growing hemp. You had to. But since 1776, marijuana was legal in this country twice as long as it was illegal. And medical marijuana existed from 1850 to 1942 in the U.S. Pharmacopeia, the official registry of legal pharmaceutical drugs or pharmaceutically recognized drugs. 1850 to 1942, 92 years. So medical marijuana was officially recognized for 11 years longer, 12 years longer than it's been prohibited. Happy Independence Day, everyone. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Looking for the 420 friendliest way to visit beautiful legal Potland, Oregon?
I'm Lori Duckworth, inviting you to come stay with us at Delta 9 House and Studios.
You get your own private room with queen bed and access to our high-speed Wi-Fi, premium entertainment system, and more.
We'll even cook you breakfast. Look us up on Facebook at Delta 9 House.
That's facebook.com/Delta9House.
Delta 9 House is booked through Airbnb.com, City of Portland, permit number 17-159855.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson for Norman. And I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
The Marijuana Agenda, like the liberal agenda, but with profits. Ka-ching.
I'm Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda. Join me every Friday for the Reefer Rock Review with Herb Thrasher from 420radio.org. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Total war against public enemy public number one.
10 federal criminal penalties for up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
Marijuana is probably the most dangerous drug.
Legalization is just another word for surrender.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
This is not medicine. This is a Cheech and Chong show.
Encourage people to use less drugs.
I am ill.
That was the point.
I think it would be a mistake to legalize.
Negative reports coming out of Colorado.
Don't smoke marijuana.
This week, a Denver grand jury announced indictments of 62 people involved in what is alleged to be significant out-of-state marijuana trafficking, conducted under the guise of legal, medical, or recreational cannabis cultivation under Colorado's Constitution. That kind of story is red meat for prohibitionists like Kevin Sabet and Jeff Sessions. They're so eager to portray marijuana legalization as this train running off the rails, propelled by the avaricious and sociopathic marijuana industry. And a key talking point in that rhetoric is this complaint that the black market marijuana dealing hasn't been eliminated in the states that legalize. And furthermore, the relaxed attitude toward marijuana in the legal states leads to a flood of marijuana crossing the border into states that still maintain prohibition. Well, The fact that we're forced politically to legalize marijuana in this slow, incremental fashion, just a few states at a time, well, it's leaving us vulnerable to this rhetoric like theirs, where the results of legalization are purposefully being conflated with the effects of prohibition. Look, are there people in legal states growing weed and selling it for great profit out of state? Hell yes, there are. But there always have been. Legalization didn't invent interstate marijuana trafficking. Generations of family farmers across America have grown cannabis where it's more plentiful, where it's more accepted, and then profited from it by selling it where it is scarcer. The difference now is that growers in some states can cultivate and possess legally, they figure, and so legalization's emboldening interstate marijuana trafficking. But if you think about it, that reasoning falls apart with just a little common sense. How does legalization in a person's home state embolden the person who's intending to break some other state's prohibition law? Think about this for a second. Really, just say you're a grower in Colorado and you're selling out of state to Kansas in the 2000s, right? It's not legal in Colorado yet. Definitely not legal in Kansas. It's the 2000s. If you were doing so, there was two crimes you were committing. One, cultivating marijuana in Colorado. And two, trafficking that marijuana in Kansas. Now, back in the day, if the cops investigated crime number one and they busted you, well, they might have you on some personal marijuana charges in state. Of course, that's kind of a tough investigation if they don't have any tips or clues or evidence that you were selling. You were just cultivating, right? But investigating crime number two, that's where the serious charges lie, because the crime's gone interstate and it involved sales. There'd be some little fish busted in Kansas who'd flip on the big fish in Colorado. The feds would get involved because it's not just some small-time in-state weed grower. So in 2012, when the people of Colorado secured their constitutional right to cultivate cannabis, that eliminated crime number one for the small-time grower, the one who's not really going to be shipping pounds to Kansas anyway. But it's still just as legal to traffic weed in Kansas, isn't it? Legalizing in Colorado in 2012 didn't legalize trafficking in Kansas, right? The risk for that grower of being busted for crime number two didn't change at all. Hell, it might have even increased, as Kansas cops are now more attuned to seeking out the Colorado weed. In fact, isn't the announcement of these indictments proof that legalization isn't providing adequate cover for the interstate dealer? That you can't bust people growing weed in state doesn't mean you've promoted people trafficking weed out of state. That's prohibition's fault, not legalization's. Prohibition has always inflated the value of a dried cannabis flower. So if Kansas chooses to maintain a law that falsely inflates the price of marijuana, well, then Kansas gets to deal with the consequences of that choice. One of them will be creating a huge profit incentive for unlicensed, unregulated purveyors of marijuana to fulfill the demand in Kansas. Prohibitionists want to offer this false dichotomy that the legalization will either eliminate or exacerbate the unregulated market. Even if we do legalize marijuana in all 50 states, however, there's always going to be a subset of providers who are going to skirt regulations and avoid taxes. This so-called black market. Look, nothing will ever eliminate an unregulated market. There are black markets in purses and DVDs and shoes. And when it comes to unregulated markets, it's prohibition, not legalization, that exacerbates unregulated markets. Cigarettes are legal, but policy and punitive taxation differences subsidize a thriving unregulated cigarette market from providers in North Carolina to consumers in Manhattan. Fireworks are legal to a varying degree, but Oregonians visit Idaho, Nevada, and Washington to bring back purchases of the type of fireworks that are prohibited back home. Hell, alcohol is prohibited on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in South Dakota, while just across the border in Whitebird, Nebraska, there's a town of 10 people that has four alcohol stores that sell tens of thousands of cans of beer daily. The only real solution for ending the so-called black market in marijuana is complete legalization in all 50 states with a minimum of taxation and regulation. Because aside from Pine Ridge, there's not much of an unregulated beer market in America. Because every adult who wants it can get it cheaply and easily just about any time, any place, anywhere in America. Furthermore, as black markets always exist, unregulated markets always exist where providers are trying to skirt regulations and avoid taxes. The only way you can minimize that is to minimize regulations and minimize taxes. It's a simple equation. Give them less margin to operate underneath, and they will stay and operate above ground. Make it so that what's happening now, the way that the cannabis economy works now, legalize that with the minimum set of regulations necessary to ensure that taxes are collected and IDs are checked. Why are we not getting some sort of marijuana dealer's license? Now, there is this in the California initiative that creates the micro business, where someone's a vertically integrated grower, processor, and seller of cannabis, and that's the right direction to go. We need to get this as close to the level of the people who have been working in this industry, who've been employing entrepreneurial spirit in the most grand tradition of the United States capitalists. It's just that what they were involved in was unregulated. Let's not stifle that entrepreneurial spirit. Let's not destroy the job-creating mechanism that has always provided jobs in inner cities, in poor neighborhoods, for people who were shut out of other markets. We've got so many people who are coming out of prisons, who are getting out of parole and probation in states that are now legal, and for some of them, they were in jail before it became legal, and they're getting out after it has been legalized, finding that what they were engaged in, the same exact practices they were engaged in, are now legal, and people are making money doing it, and they're shut out from that. They're not allowed to participate in that. The very best operators, the best talent, the best entrepreneurial minds, marketing geniuses, and sales gurus are shut out of the cannabis market because they were caught. They were caught doing it. And then we make these new laws that say you can't get a license if you've got a prior criminal conviction. Why wouldn't we be granting more licenses to those people? The experts in the field, the people who were wronged in something that we now acknowledge and accept as a tax-paying, job-creating industry. We should be giving people points for having a prior conviction for nonviolent marijuana distribution. Not to kids. But if you were busted selling, you know, some dime bags to other adults, and by that I mean people of voting age, people of military enlistment age, then you should not be disqualified from being able to do so on a legal basis and be able to contribute back to society and have taxes paid and have regulations followed and safety guidelines. This is what we should be encouraging rather than discouraging this. It is prohibition's fault that interstate trafficking still exists, not legalization's fault. You can't hold Colorado responsible for Kansas holding on to outdated, ineffective policies from the 20th century.
unbelievable.
Unbelievable is right. You know, American Idol is coming back. It's going to be on ABC. Hell, they brought back Gong Show. Did you see? I watched the Gong Show. Mike Myers from SNL and Austin Powers is in character on the Gong Show. Everything old is new again, including me. Happy Independence Day. It's 420. Let's be safe out there.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
My daughter has diplegia, cerebral palsy, which is sort of from the waist down, so her lower limbs don't work effectively. After age 2.5, she began to show signs of autism and self-injurious behavior. There are many families out there in other states that have similar situations, and they're using medical cannabis, and it's helping their symptoms. It's very difficult as a mom to know that there is a medication out there that is being used effectively in other states, and Texas isn't providing that for patients here. Medical cannabis could greatly improve the quality of life for my daughter. It is absolutely inhumane for lawmakers to keep medical cannabis from patients. Texans deserve better.
The marijuana agenda, like the alcohol agenda. But a lot safer.
I'm Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda. Join me every Friday for the Reefer Rock Review with Herb Thrasher from 420radio.org. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Hello, Mr. Man.
Hi.
I'm working. I'm sorry. No food till this is done.
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
All right. For this segment, I want to return to the topic of the opioid overdose crisis that we have in this country. And, you know, I've been taking some hits on this from a couple listeners who, do not like the way I talk about opioids. And one of the prime disagreements, I guess we could call it, is what is the nature of addiction? What makes people addicted? What causes an addiction? Are drugs addictive? And I guess it depends on what you mean by addictive, right? Like, to me, does a chemical substance alter our being in such a way that lacking that chemical substance causes great discomfort? To me, that is a measure, right? That's one way we could possibly say, does addiction exist? And another would be, does going without this thing suddenly lead to the possibility of dying, right? That to me is, now we're starting to talk about addictive substances in my mind. So to me, you know, as far as I can comprehend, heroin and OxyContin and morphine and Dilaudid and Percocet and fentanyl are addictive. That's my belief, that these things are addictive in that they cause a withdrawal symptom. They cause
overdose deaths. They cause everything that we tend to think of as addiction. But I've been attacked on this. And people throwing Dr. Carl Hart at me and blah, 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 blah. And say, drugs don't cause addiction. Drugs don't cause addiction. Drugs don't cause addiction. And I can't get my mind around this. Now, maybe I can if I'm educated in a polite, respectful way. If you call me names, if you say I'm like Kevin Sabet, then you're shutting down that I'm shutting that conversation down because I can't take it. My blood pressure can't handle it. but I'm willing to have the discussion. So here's the thing. It's like, to me, I see someone who has a heroin dependence as the kind of person who's in the grips of a chemical bondage from which they cannot escape without risking serious harm to themselves, like dying from their withdrawal symptoms. Now the argument might be, well, with medical care, they'll be fine. With detox, they'll be fine. I'm like, yeah, sure. And if Bernie Sanders had been elected, the world would be a better place. And if, you know, wishes were fishes and so forth, right? Yeah, I understand that if we had a better society, if we had more mental health care, if we treated addiction with better, health responses, if we had more of a social safety net, if people were fully employed, if homelessness wasn't a problem, yada, yada, yada. But those things will be problems and continue to be problems. They're not going to be solved in a year. And in the meantime, you got 60,000 people dying. And I'm not against people having access to these things, to opiates, to any drug. I'm the guy that wants them all legalized. I think all drugs should be legal. But legal is a spectrum that ranges from chocolate to carfentanil. Carfentanil, the fentanyl that's 100 times more powerful than fentanyl. So it's amazing what science can come up with. So I put the marijuana and the chocolate and the caffeine and the ecstasy. Well, I'd put maybe not ecstasy down that low, but definitely most of these easygoing drugs, we'll put them in the chocolate category. We get into the psychedelic drugs and ecstasy and such. We'll put them in the next, but there's got to be a spectrum because we have to have some sort of acknowledgement that there are. It was part of my rant the other day. The worst of us ruin it for the rest of us. And yes, plenty of people, the vast majority, can use heroin or OxyContin or other opiate drugs and lead productive, vital, non-quote-unquote addict lives. Hell, my dad's a perfect example. For 10, 20 years now, 15 years at least, he's been gulping down Percocets and Dilaudids. He's got a serious neuropathy. He's recently taken to vaporizing CBD and thus reducing by a large amount how much of those pills he's had to take. But I totally understand. People can be heroin users and live plenty wonderful, productive lives. They've been musicians and models and actors and all sorts of folks have done just fine on that. That's not the point. That's like me recounting all the people I know who've worked at High Times and Normal, who I've talked to, who've told me that they started smoking pot when they were 12 or 13. And it didn't hurt them, and they went on to lead wonderful, productive lives. Yes, indeed, they have. It's a selection bias, though. I'm leading a wonderful, productive life and living amongst people who live wonderful, productive lives, so everyone we know who smoked pot when they were 12 leads wonderful, productive lives. That doesn't mean smoking pot at age 12 is a recommended or safe or good thing to do. So I'm afraid these people that attack me on this are fighting some demon or some argument that they see represented in me that I don't feel like I'm presenting. I think I've always been pretty clear about, hey, do to yourself what you want to do. Your mind and your body are your business, and nobody has the right to tell you not to do with those mind and body what you want to do. But we should have reasonable safety regulations. Whether it's guns or fentanyl, we have to recognize that allowing easy access and a mass proliferation of these things is going to lead to more people dead. There is a direct correlative chart you can put out. DEA opioids that are allowed, people that die, people that check into rehab, all of them increase at the same rate. So there is something there. They go up and down together. They correlate with each other. And I, it's just really galling to be told that I'm fucking people over like Kevin Sabat when it comes to opioids, that I hate heroin users and I want to throw them under the bus. I was actually accused of supporting alcohol and McDonald's because that will keep me popular and I won't have to take any shots for that, you know, and then I can still go forth with the marijuana thing. All sorts of, you know, it got real tinfoil hatty real quick. But anyway, here's some facts. From 1993 to 2015, the DEA approved increases in the production of hydrocodone 12-fold. 12 times more hydrocodone produced from 1993 to 2015. Hydromorphone, 23 times more. Fentanyl, 25 times more. Oxycodone, 39 times more allowed between 1993 and 2015. Now, this is not to say that, one, pain patients with extreme need shouldn't have these things, or that, two, people that want to use opioids should be punished and incarcerated for using them. However, are there really 39 times more, is there really 39 times more demand now for these pain pills than there was in 1993? Are there 39 times more people in serious pain than there were in 1993? I mean, I'm willing to entertain that. Were we under-treating pain by a factor of 39 in 1993? Or did it have something to do with unleashing the pharmaceutical companies to be able to advertise direct to the consumer, to be able to mass-produce quantities of this stuff, to be able to bribe doctors, to be able to get kickbacks, to be able to lie basically to doctors about it having little to no potential for abuse, massive marketing and advertising campaigns to convince doctors that Oxy and other drugs should be the medicine of first resort for chronic pain. This is not going away. This is just, if anything, getting worse this year, this opiate epidemic. And we see it again, sorry, not epidemic, crisis, opiate crisis. We see it hitting hardest in a lot of Trump counties, a lot of rural working class areas. And yes, you can make the very strong argument that, hey, look how this map matches misery, matches unemployment, matches factories closing down, matches people on Medicare, Medicaid, getting SNAP, you know, that really this opiate crisis is a symptom of dysfunction at the societal level, the lack of the safety net, the lack of education and so forth. And I agree with that somewhat. I agree that people seek those kind of things. The question is, how much of it and how easy do we make it for them to get it when it's so devastating, when we see all the deaths that occur from it? I mean, is the argument that, because if you make the argument that this is based in, you know, we got to fix society, that's a cool argument. I agree. Let's elect Bernie Sanders. Let's elect a blue dog Democrat proof, veto proof majority, right? Let's make that, let's wave a magic wand and make that happen. Let's have Bernie Sanders replace at least three of the justices on the Supreme Court while we're at it. Let's make all that happen. I'm all for that to stop the opiate crisis. Stopped myself there. I'm all for that. That's great. In the meantime, what should we do? Keep producing a massive amount of opiates so that the people that already got addicted at this point continue to have an uninterrupted supply and don't have to turn to the street to get heroin laced with fentanyl. Great. Okay. Sure. At the same time, with the states are cracking down on pill mills and rampant overprescribing, I mean, these are goals that aren't going to work with each other. Because the argument I'm getting back sounds a lot like, to me, like we need to have more opiate production, more access to opiates, have more people on opiates until we can fix society. And since I don't really believe society is going to get fixed anytime soon, what are we going to just, I don't know. It's a complex issue and I'm willing to accept education on it. I'm willing to talk to anybody on it. But don't call me names. That's when I'll stop talking to you. I got too much to do. I got a busy life. All right, we're back right after this.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Hi, I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Putting together the most comprehensive live weekday marijuana news talk program is a full-time job. Now you can do your part to ensure that listener-supported independent cannabis radio journalism can continue by becoming a patron of the Marijuana Agenda. Just log on to mjagenda.com and click the Become a Patron button. If you're an organization or business looking to promote your brand, we have sponsorship patronage available at mjagenda.com. Sponsorship includes 15 and 30 second ad breaks and 6-minute interviews on the podcast, depending on sponsorship level, which begins at $19.99 a month. Thank you for your support, and remember, I cannot do it without you. Please become a patron today at mjagenda.com.
It's time for Cannabis Facts About Alzheimer's from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. This message is supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. A new Florida study in the journal Molecular and Cellular Neuroscience found that cannabis promotes the growth of healthy new brain tissue. It can slow the effects of Alzheimer's and may, in fact, be able to halt it entirely. A long-term study by Ohio State University's Professor Gary Wenk concludes that people who regularly use marijuana get Alzheimer's at a much lower rate than others. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors. And Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com.
You're not high. You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I reject the idea that we're going to be better placed if we have more marijuana.
Okay, maybe you're a little high.
I'm Russ Belville with the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for the Cannabis Minority Report from the Minority Cannabis Business Association. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
All right, welcome back, everybody. And continuing the discussion on the opioid overdose crisis, some other facts to bring up. You know, one of the things that's happened here is that the feds, the DEA, have allowed the big pharmaceutical companies to pump out. They've allowed their quotas to just go through the roof. 39 times more oxycodone produced in 2015 than in 1993. 39 times more, right? And then the supply got ratcheted up. And then we had the pill mill situation where entrepreneurs figured out that they could get doctors to sign off on scripts for people with just a rubber stamp, pretty much, and have lines of people out the door coming to get their Oxy prescription or whatever it might have been. And so the government, as there becomes more of a problem with people overdosing, what do? Do they go to the big pharmaceutical companies and say, hey, we need to cut down production? No. They went and started stomping out the pill mills. Oh, you bad little entrepreneurs at the consumer level. Boo, we'll stomp you out. So now you got someone who's gotten themselves a dependence on oxycodone, goes to their little doc in the box the next day, 20 days later, to go get their prescription refilled, and that place is closed down. That place isn't there. And now what do? They can't find another place, but they know there's a guy that can get some heroin. And now they're on the street heroin. It's cheaper. And now they're in the market where it can be laced with fentanyl and they overdose and die. So, what is the answer? Here's a radical thought. More pill mills? Maybe we just get rid of the Controlled Substances Act altogether and allow adults to purchase any substance they want to purchase for ingestion into their body. Hemlock, morphine, heroin, acid, PCP, GHB, anything, whatever people want, anything, any substance completely legal, as legal to buy as a pack of cigarettes. We'll check your ID, make sure you're an adult, but no limits on it. You can buy as many of them as you want, as much of it as you want. Why not do that? I know that kind of freaks people out to think about that, but let's figure out what would happen. Because if you ask yourself, why are people taking so much opiate painkiller? They didn't all get into accidents at work or twist their knee playing softball or whatever it is that got them to the emergency room, got them to a doctor, got them on a legit prescription, and then, it ran out and now they're hooked and they have to go get heroin. I'm sure that happens, but it can't be everybody. Why are people taking these drugs? Well, because they're in pain. Psychic pain, social pain, financial pain, and actual physical pain. So, if we legalized all drugs, people with pain would have more choices. When they first have pain, their choices are, I can drink. I can drink, or I can go to the doctor who will prescribe me pain pills. But if all drugs were legal, imagine that you could try, it's not so much physical pain as I'm having psychosomatic pain because I'm under so much stress. And maybe a acid trip or a therapist-guided session with MDMA or some mushrooms or who knows. Some people, maybe, as we saw in Amanda Ryman's study that just recently came out, a huge proportion of people that would say they'd use cannabis instead. Maybe if all drugs are absolutely legal with completely easy retail access, the laws of supply and demand kick in. Because how much demand is there really for a full-blown, blanketing, knock-you-out-for-the-day opiate high? I'm sure the demand exists. We have people that like that kind of high. But I think for a lot of people, if they were able to de-stress with a nice brain-flushing acid trip, they'd be relaxed and happy and ready to go back into life. The demand for drugs would probably start to match their effectiveness and safety profiles. We'd probably start to see much more use of mushrooms and LSD and MDMA and cannabis, even more so than we have now, and perhaps less use of heroin and OxyContin and cocaine and other drugs. Not to say necessarily more or less use is good or bad. I don't care how many people drink. I don't care how many people smoke cigarettes. I don't care how many people smoke pot. I don't care how many people smoke, shoot, snort, anything. What I care about is them dying. What I care about them is having overdoses and using emergency room facilities and EMTs that have to respond to their overdoses. How do we reduce that? Because I am the person who believes there are people out there take all manner of drugs on a regular basis and lead fine, productive lives you'd never know. So how do we have more of those and fewer of the Joaquin Phoenixes? Or is it River Phoenix? Sorry, Joaquin. Wrong one. Sorry. That's my concern. And it gets frustrating talking about this issue and getting attacked over it when my concern is the deaths. My concern is the deaths and the corporate profit from misery. The profit motive in creating misery. You know, that and manufacturing a need. I got no problem with the people who have, you know, the legitimate pain issues getting the opiate painkillers they need. I question letting our pharmaceutical companies generate profit by convincing people, patients and doctors, that they're that the best option would be these painkillers that have a high risk profile in terms of addiction and what they do to your body. I don't know. Maybe I'm not clear on this. Maybe I'm, and folks, guess what? Sometimes I'm not. Sometimes I have to talk through this stuff and I have to be attacked and I have to write and read before I whittle away and sharpen what it is I think about a particular issue. And I'll admit this opiate issue is, you know, besides having taken a few OxyContin back in the 90s, I don't have a great deal of understanding of it. But I do see many, many people dying from this. I do see this becoming a big political concern from our side, saying that cannabis is a way to give people another option to keep them away from having to use these drugs. And the other side saying marijuana is the gateway that led to these drugs. So it's something we're going to have to talk about. And as cannabis consumers and cannabis advocates, we have to avoid certain traps. I don't feel like I'm demonizing people that use heroin, but maybe I am. Maybe I've got a blind spot. If so, I'll work to correct it. But I'm worried about the deaths. I'm worried about the deaths and the profit from misery. I think I've been consistent about that throughout my career as I've discussed issues of drugs and prohibition. I just look at the numbers, and it's hard for me to buy that this isn't a crisis we need to worry about. Oxycodone for sale in 2015. No, let's go to the peak. The peak of this was 2013. Federal government approved 153,750,000 kilograms of quota. 153 million kilograms, people. I got that right? Oh, no, that's a decimal point. Sorry. 153,000. Phew. 153,000 kilograms. They did it decimal point with three. Yeah. Factor of three. All right. So this is in kilograms of substance. Okay. So 153,000 kilograms. Kilogram is 2.2 pounds. Now that's declined recently. It's gone down year after year, 149,000, 141,000, 139,000. They're now down to 108,000 for the quota in 2017. So it does look like they're pulling back that quota. Morphine for sale, 41,000 kilograms, down from 62,000 kilograms. Some of this is coming down. Hydrocodone for sale, almost cut in half. Or 2013 peak was 99,000. 2017, 58,000. But it's interesting because they also have in this the line for marijuana. You know, the federal government allows a quota for the production of marijuana. Going back to as recently as 2009, the federal government approved 4,500 kilograms of marijuana production. In 2010, that dropped to 21 kilograms of pot and stayed 21 kilograms a year through 2013. So at the same time, the federal government is allowing the pharmaceutical companies to ramp up the production of oxycodone and hydrocodone and so forth. Marijuana production is down to 21 kilograms. Hell, I know farmers who produce 21 kilograms. Now that's been raised. 2014, they raised it to 650 kilograms and then lowered again to 2017's 472 kilograms. All right. That's enough facts, science, reason, and logic. When we come back, we'll close up the week and get ready for what looks to be a beautiful Independence Day weekend. I'm headed out to the Waterfront Blues Fest to see Elvin Bishop and Chris Isaak. Stay tuned. We're back right after this.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Hey everybody, it's Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
It's time for Cannabis Facts about Teen Drug Use from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. This message is supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. A recent survey by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control indicates that in states that have legalized medical marijuana, the rate of marijuana consumption among high school students has not increased. In fact, in legal states like Colorado, teen use has actually decreased significantly. It's simply no longer a big deal for teenagers in legal states. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com.
The Marijuana Agenda, like the pharmaceutical agenda, without all the side effects, overdose deaths, you know, insurance.
Side effects may include nausea, dry mouth, and constipation. Dry mouth, constipation, indigestion, and abdominal pain.
Which can occur without warning and may cause death.
I'm Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for the Celebrity Marijuana Zone with Steve Bloom from CelebStoner.com. Learn more at MJAgenda.com/about.
I have a package here for Radical Rick. Is there a Radical Rick here? How about a Rick Russ? Any Rick Russ? Somebody named Freddie Barak has sent him a package. Anybody? What is that? Sounds like a skunk.
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
All right. It is the last segment of the first half of 2017. I can't believe that tomorrow is July 1st. Great day July 1st is going to be as our Airbnb becomes a superhost. We'll hit superhost status on July 1st. And legal recreational sales happening in Nevada on July 1st. That's tomorrow. Actually, tonight at midnight, those are happening. And I've stripped down to the t-shirt because I'm getting ready as fast as I can to head out to that Waterfront Blues Fest. Honestly, I stripped down the t-shirt because I thought I was still wearing my New Orleans Jazz t-shirt thing, and I'm not. I switched shirts. So I was going to show off my shirt, and then I'm not wearing my shirt. How stupid of me. Oh my goodness. Anyway, big thanks to everybody who's been a part of the Marijuana Agenda this week of shows. And on Monday, excited to announce our first inaugural segment of ACE's Patient Focused Update. Americans for Safe Access is on board with the Marijuana Agenda, and we'll be presenting every other Monday. So it's every 2 weeks, every other Monday, a segment from Americans for Safe Access, the organization focused on patients in the marijuana movement. So we're going to get the latest medical marijuana info, the latest state regulatory info, which states are next, what ASA is doing as far as fighting for patient rights in employment and housing and child custody and organ transplants. And it's just a big issue. The medical side of it will be covering every 2 weeks. First episode on Monday features an interview with Dr. Jehan Marku, and he's going to be talking about the need for patient-focused certification, which is a way of standardizing services at medical marijuana dispensaries to show that they meet patient needs. So it's an interesting discussion. We'll have that on Monday's show for you. Also coming up on the Marijuana Agenda next week, we'll have our Canadian Cannabis Chronicle on Monday. On Tuesday, we start to talk about the psychotherapeutic value in psychedelic medicines with our Expanded Mind segment featuring Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies. And we'll get some more activist agenda going that week as well. Also, in next week's rotation, we've got the Hemp Day Hump Day update. We'll be speaking with one of our favorite hemp experts on the latest developments in the industrial uses of cannabis. Also, the Veterans of Compassion will get a clip from their most recent conference call where they help veterans navigate the access to medical marijuana. We've got the Voice of the Industry segment coming up on Thursday, National Cannabis Industries Association and their work with advocacy for cannabis businesses. And our Reformers Readers segment, we'll have another author on discussing their latest book they've written about the cannabis movement. And we wind up the week next week with our drug policy reform update. Oh, I blew that part of it. Tuesday, we don't have a show Tuesday. Tuesday is Independence Day. So forget about the Expanded Mind segment. We won't have that on Tuesday because I won't be working. Friday, the drug policy reform update. Big reminder, drug policy reform conference is October 11th through 14th in Atlanta. It's a biennial conference, so you catch it now or you won't get to catch it until 2019. And Reform Conference is amazing. It's huge as far as attendees, like 600 or so attendees. And Atlanta will be very prepped for us to visit. So looking so forward to that. Check out, I think it's reformconference.org, or just go to drugpolicy.org and you should be able to find links that would get you there. Also on Friday, next Friday, our United Kingdom Cannabis Chronicle, and it'll be great talking with the folks out in the UK. I'm headed there for, Product Earth is what it's called, their festival that they're doing September 2nd and 3rd in the UK in Birmingham, England. We'll be there, my first ever visit to the United Kingdom. So I am looking so forward to getting that stamp on my passport. I can't even tell you. That's happening September 2nd and 3rd, and I'll probably be out there before and after. We're going to extend the stay as long as I can over that Labor Day weekend. And so we may do some live shows from the United Kingdom. That'll be a lot of fun. But for now, that's all the time we got. Time flies when you legalize. For everyone here at Delta 9 House and Studio, I'm Radical Russ Belville from Radical Russ Media LLC, wishing you full bowls and ever full lighters. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
Follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
You're growing, you're trying, you're rolling, you're smoking. you take a scene, you plan it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a scene, you plan it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.